Welcome to Empire Builders, the podcast that talks about building big businesses and even bigger lives. My name's Via Williams, and I am an empire builder.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Wendy Papazan, and I'm an empire builder.
I'm Seychelle Van Poole, and I'm an empire builder.
Hi, I'm Sarah Reynolds, and I am an empire builder.
All right, Sarah, I'm so excited about today's episode. Tell us what it's going to be.
So today, as we dive into big businesses and big lives, we're going to focus on two of our empire builders that are right here on our podcast today. So I know Wendy has a lot of amazing questions to start us off with, learning more about Seychelle and her amazing both business and her big life.
Thanks, Sarah. Well, welcome, listeners and viewers. We are going to do a deep dive today with pretty much one of my favorite human beings on the planet. Her name is Seychelle Van Poole, and I think we've known each other probably about 10 years,
yeah,
right?
We've known each other about 10 years.
Yeah, since I started my business, and sure. you were not too long into the business.
No, yeah, I was about 4 years in at that point, so still pretty new myself. And what's really neat is I had heard about you long before I met you, and so it was really exciting, actually, when we first got to know each other, because immediately I knew that there was something special.
Yeah.
That you were building.
Yeah. Well, I feel lucky to know you. So I'm glad we're going to be chatting today.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so we're really going to talk about kind of your origin story.
Sure.
Right? How you got started in business and how you sort of got dragged kicking and screaming into your family real estate empire.
I think that's a completely fair assessment.
Yeah. So
yeah, you're totally right, because I swore up and down I would never get into real estate.
Okay.
And here we are in real estate.
Yeah.
Go figure.
So what happened?
So when I was a senior in high school, my parents had owned their own company for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And my dad—
Not real estate though.
Not real estate. Okay. He actually was a women's accessories sales rep.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents are awesome and had owned their own company since I was born. So my husband and I tease that I was born in a business. Mm-hmm. More than I was born into a family, because mm-hmm. our dinner conversations were about economics and sales and upcoming markets and designs. And I mean, it was not about, like, you know, what did you do with Valentine's Day?
So well, that gives me
that's
hope.
Very much.
I have two children.
Yes.
And that's pretty much their life. And you seem perfectly well adjusted.
Slightly tweaked, mostly.
Totally good.
Mostly.
So you grew up in a business environment.
Your
parents are serial entrepreneurs.
They're serial entrepreneurs. They always had businesses going. And so I really didn't stand a chance, right, mm-hmm. of not being an entrepreneur myself. But, you know, like as a kid, I took my first steps at the apparel mart at the, you know, in downtown Dallas.
Mm-hmm. At the apparel mart, is what you said?
At the apparel mart. Okay. That's where I took my first steps, literally. Okay. So, I mean, you know, from day one, like, we were in business together. Mm-hmm. And I worked for my dad's company in high school. Mm-hmm. I would go do the merchandising and their sales analysis for Dillard's and Foley's and JCPenney's. And
so then naturally, you said, as soon as I graduate, I'm going to work in the family business.
Yeah, I absolutely want to do this, right? So I, you know, of course, I think, especially when you're a teenager, you want to rebel, right? You want to create your own identity. Mm-hmm. And so when I was a senior in high school, my dad was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And, you know, healthcare at that point did not allow for really gentle pre-existing conditions.
Mm.
And so my mom was really smart and went to go work in a large corporation for the health insurance, because Parkinson's at that point, right? I mean, we didn't know what it was going to be. There was no Michael J. Fox Foundation. There was no really good information out there about what Parkinson's was.
And so this is when you were in high school, or senior in college?
I was a senior in high school. I was in my spring year.
Okay.
And so what is that? Freaked out.
Yeah.
And so, and
what was going through your head?
Oh, I think I got really depressed, mm-hmm. honestly. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think our whole family did. And, you know, it was interesting. My dad told me later that his doctor told him either you have a brain aneurysm or Parkinson's.
Mm.
We don't know which one it is.
Wow.
And so actually, he was thrilled that it was Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Because he was like, well, you know.
Perspective, right?
I'm not going to have like a giant event that's going to just like explode. Like, it's going to be a much more gradual process.
Yeah, but tell our listeners a little bit about what that really looks like. Because to be honest, I know it's a degenerative disease that happens over time.
It is.
But what does that really look like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so what's interesting with Parkinson's is a lot of patients have their mental faculties but their ability to produce dopamine, which is what controls your motor skills, like goes away at a rapid pace. And so you think about like you're moving your hand, using a fork, writing something, eating a taco, one of my favorite things, right? You can't really do it because you have a tremor. It also can cause your body to freeze up. You'll see a lot of people with Parkinson's that have like a frozen kind of look on their face, or maybe like a frozen like posture or body like movement. And it just, it really creates a lot of nervous skill and motor skill challenges. Okay. And so, you know, when you're used to being an entrepreneur and you're writing, you know, vendor orders still, right? You can't write them. Like your job is to go travel the world, and it becomes more exhausting to travel, or you have a tremor 24 hours a day.
So your whole family's world changed.
Everything changed.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I had a younger sister that was a freshman in high school. So for her, you know, I mean, I really think about her. That was a crazy time. And so all that to say, and going to college, my parents freaked out, rightfully so. I mean, I put myself in their shoes. I would be freaking out. And they said, you know, I want you to stay local. You need to stay local till you're a junior. And you're going to live at home and commute to college. And I was thankful that they gave me zero debt coming out of college, which I'm incredibly thankful for. But they always said, you're going to stay local your first 2 years and get basically the fail-out classes
and
done.
And that wasn't your game plan?
No, that wasn't my plan.
Okay.
No.
And how did that affect you?
Well, I think I was at peace with it to a degree of like, oh, I need to do what I can do to help my family. So I was absolutely at peace with that. And I also was 17 and wanted to create my own identity and get out of the house as a teenager. And so every morning I woke up, I drove from Plano, 40 miles north to Denton. And then I drove back down to downtown Dallas, which is another 60 miles south every night to work. And then I would drive home every day. So I had about a 2.5 hour commute every single day. And I did my first semester. I took 18 hours my first semester and I decided this is terrible.
Yeah.
I had no college life, right? I was either working or school or sleeping. That was basically it. And so I created a little binder and figured out how many hours I needed to become a junior. Because they told me I had to be a junior. They didn't say your first 2 years.
Okay.
So I set out to become
your parents, you're talking about.
My parents, yeah. So I became a junior in a year.
Okay. Wow.
There you go. And they said it was going to take, you know, 60 hours to become a junior. And so I became a junior in 60 hours.
So then what? You got
And I transferred to UT. I did. And I escaped. And I swore I would never come back. And here I am. But, you know, so then,
but then you moved to New York.
I did. College, yeah, I worked in advertising agencies all through college. And then I moved to New York and worked for DDB Worldwide up there, which is an awesome agency that's part of the Omnicom brand.
Was that kind of your dream to be in New York?
It was. My senior year, I cold called all the CEOs. Because I figured everyone was calling the HR directors. So why call the HR directors? Everyone's calling them.
Any seniors listening?
Yeah, call the CEO. I did. I called the CEOs because I thought, well, they're going to be the ones to tell the HR director who to hire anyways, right? If they make a recommendation, someone's going to listen.
Naturally.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've always thought outside of the box, right? You tell me it's going to take 60 hours, but not 2 years, and then it's going to be 60 hours. I'm going to hit the goal.
Right,
but don't tell me how I have to get there.
Right.
I think that's always been a trend.
Right.
And so same
sounds
with
like
New York.
A lot of entrepreneurs, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I didn't want to get into real estate. My mom went to corporate America and then in 2001 got into real estate. She actually got her real estate license on September 11th, 2001.
And your dad's still at his business, right?
It was starting to decline.
Okay.
I mean, I think if you look around at the retail landscape now versus 20 years ago, I think we all could say that it's a very different landscape for retail than it was then. I mean, you know, Amazon didn't exist. eBay was barely anything. You know, it was just a very different landscape. And so I moved to New York. I worked in advertising. I loved it. I loved the energy. I loved the client management. I loved the negotiation. I loved the work. I loved the production. I loved it all. Truly.
And then your mom started her real estate business.
She started her real estate business
the
year before that. And my dad would travel up for market 4 times a year. And I think
to New York.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think anytime you see somebody that has a degenerative disease, when you see it every day, you don't notice the little bitty things. Mm-hmm. But then when you see it once every 3 months, you notice the progression that much faster. And so I started asking myself the question of if something happens to him with Parkinson's, it's a degenerative disease. There is no cure.
Right.
If something happens to him, then who's going to take care of him? And I realized very quickly, I have a little sister that's a freshman in college. That's not realistic. My mom is going to want to take care of him. But then they're in their early 50s, right? They're in their early 50s.
Yeah.
They have their whole life ahead of them.
Yeah.
I mean, 50 is so young. And so you know, I think about that and I thought, well, if she's taking care of him, who takes care of them? Mm-hmm. And I very quickly realized that my starting salary in advertising was not going to cut it.
Right.
And I looked ahead 20 years, my senior, and I thought, if I stay in corporate advertising 20 years from now, I'm going to be lucky to make enough to support my family, commuting an hour on the train every day mm-hmm. and never seeing my family working 70 hours a week because that's what all of my bosses were doing.
Right.
And I looked at that and said, you know, do I really want to work to live or do I want to live to work?
I love that. So do I want to work to live or do I want to live to work?
Yeah.
I love that.
And that's
and
really...
what did you choose?
Yeah, I chose to work to live.
Yeah.
And that was a defining moment for me. And I knew that I had a bigger purpose, which was, this isn't for me. I have to build security for my family. Yeah. And in my head, I was 20,
so here you
I was
are,
21,
early
22.
20s. Yeah,
yeah,
early
21, 22.
Well,
and I,
in a way, what a gift, you know, figuring out your mission.
Yeah, it was then. Great clarity.
Well, that's really
clarity.
Mature for 21.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of us didn't start our businesses until our 30s and 40s. So.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. A Parkinson's has given us a lot of gifts. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the biggest lessons I've learned from my dad is that you can't always control what happens to you, mm-hmm. but you absolutely can control the attitude you keep
right.
and the actions that you take.
Right.
And if he...
It's okay.
...can have a great attitude, then why can't I?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you.
So that's what we did.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't always get to choose. We don't always get to choose. And yet what I love about your story is that you took that was, you didn't choose it. You didn't choose to really take over your mom's real estate business, which is essentially what happened. And you moved forward to really build your perfect life.
We did.
So, yeah. So I'd love to talk about that. So I know your mom started the business and she did that for how many years?
She was in business for 3 years before I got there. Mm-hmm. And I know, Sarah in an earlier episode stated she joined her mom's business when they had 30 sales. We were at 36 sales. So right about the same amount of time.
I'm pretty sure we were our mom's best hires.
We really were very smart. My mom was like, you just need to birth your replacement.
Yeah.
It's super simple. You've got three students.
Yeah, three in the running.
Yeah, you've got three in the running. I'm hoping mine is one. So, you know, I got my real estate license. I quit my job in New York. I moved to Texas. I didn't ever look back and got my real estate. I literally did my classes while still living in New York, moved back to Texas and into Dallas, and I became a buyer's agent. My first real estate event I went to with a happy hour, and I was 21 trying to look like I was, you know, 30, right?
Yeah.
I was trying to look like I was 30. So I had on this like turtleneck, you know, that was like very conservative and these fake glasses.
And Michelle, she is a very petite person.
Yeah.
just kind of a tiny person overall and looks actually very young for your age. Now you've probably caught up, but I definitely...
My lack of sleep does help me catch up.
You do look young. I can imagine at 21, you look like you were 16.
Yeah. I oftentimes, they were like, are you old enough to have your real estate license?
Yeah.
You know, and I would just have to say, well,
that.
I feel like I was born in real estate, you know, because that was the only thing I could say.
I love that.
And I went to my first happy hour there. It was a networking happy hour. And honestly, at 21, I was just looking for someone safe to talk to. Mm-hmm. And I met this guy named Jeff, who was 73 years old. Mm-hmm. And he was in, if you can imagine living in Texas, right? You have the starched Wrangler jeans.
Yes.
And the cowboy boots and the Wrangler belt buckle.
The crease
that is so sharp down the front that you see. And the white...
I don't think guys in Seattle do that.
Yeah, this is not a Seattle thing at all.
Or a DC thing.
For sure not.
This is for
definitely
sure Texas.
Texas.
Yeah. He had the white starched shirt. Right. So if any of you are from Texas, you know what I'm talking about. And he was there and he was 73 and this little twinkle in his eye and he seemed like a really safe person, honestly, to talk to. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, I said, you know, you're here. What do you do in real estate? And he said, well, I guess I'm kind of in real estate. I said, well, what does that mean? And he goes, well, I don't know. I own rental properties. And my experience with real estate had been living in New York with a landlord literally named Guido.
Amazing.
He matched the name. He was horrible.
The gold chain.
And so, gold chain, kind of the receding hairline, the shirt a little too open. It's like
amazing.
Inappropriate. And you're like, Guido, I don't need to see that.
More stories later on Guido.
That's if you come to the
right.
to the Empire Builders Happy Hour.
Yeah, there you go.
And You know, so I thought, gosh, that sounds terrible. I feel so bad for you. Why do you own rental properties? And he goes, well, I don't know. I guess it's not that bad. I own about 100 rental properties and they all cash flow about $1,000 a month.
Wow.
And my jaw must have been so far on the floor that I like had to pick it up and put it back together. Because at 21, you know, I was not a math major, but I can do that, right? Yeah. So I was like, okay, you're making $1.2 million. Yeah, right?
$1,000.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you're making $1.2 million a year on rental properties. And so I literally bought him Lone Star beers the rest of the night. And I talked to nobody else at the happy hour. And he literally changed my entire course.
Wow. And so probably the Lone Star beers were about $3 a piece.
Yes. This is probably a $21 investment.
Yeah. What was the ROI?
Yeah. Well said, Wendy.
And so literally... I immediately set to task. I told Nick, I said, I don't know how we're going to do real estate, but I know we're going to invest in property. Nick is my husband.
Great.
And he's also my high school sweetheart. We've known each other, or not high school, college sweetheart. We've known each other though since we were 15.
Nice.
Wow.
And we started planning that when we got married, instead of keeping presents, we registered anywhere that you could return your presents for cash.
Oh, that's
and
brilliant.
We did. And I had you can imagine I had a spreadsheet.
Hopefully
you know,
letting us are listening right
now. No, if you can though, this is a very smart investment in our marriage because that property we bought, so we returned everything for cash and I had a spreadsheet, right? I wrote all the thank you notes. I kept my spreadsheet of everything they brought, and then we brought like car loads of crap back to the store.
Nice.
And that's we bought amazing. Our first rental property. So we put 5% down. Okay. We bought the house for $155,000. We now owe $50,000 on the property and it's worth $325,000.
Wow.
And
wow.
The same tenants the whole time.
Wow.
Wow.
No turnover. Amazing. They just signed another 2-year lease. So that really gave me a taste. I mean, those Lone Star beers immediately translated into our first investment property less than a year later. And
that's another episode. How to turn Lone Star beer into rental property.
Yes.
There's a lot of lessons in what you just said.
Yeah. That's yeah. Amazing. I mean, for me, I think one thing that I do really well is listen to somebody else's experience and learn from that and directly apply that into a growth opportunity for me. And that's something that I really appreciate about what we've done with building our tribe and building this group of empire builders is because there's so many lessons I can take from you, whether it's a success or a failure, and I immediately apply that into my life. And I think that's really important.
Well, yeah, and you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with.
You are.
You are the people that you surround yourself with.
You
and,
are.
And your networks and that's your tribes. Right. It's super important. Okay, Seychelles, so fast forward, I guess about 20 years. Well, 12 years. Yeah. When did you buy that first rental property?
We bought that rental property 13 years ago.
Okay, 13 years ago. So flash forward 13 years. Tell us about your empire now.
Yeah, so... I think the lesson I took away from the rental property game was that things can be synergistic.
Okay.
You can build on top of pieces. And so we own 8 rental properties. We have an insurance business. We have a real estate business that did $2.5 million in revenue last year. We have investments in other companies. We have a rental property company that we've bought or built up and then sold off. We've built up a high-end meat curing company before. I mean, we're very entrepreneurial, but I think what we really...
I think of the four of us, actually, you're the truest entrepreneur. You've built more businesses.
Well, I'm not afraid of that.
Combined.
I'm not afraid of that. You know, the biggest lesson I have learned is there's 3 key components that have to be present for it to work. Mm-hmm. And probably by failing through a few of those pretty hard, I learned those lessons because I sacrificed one of them and didn't stay true to our core tenants. But yeah, I mean, we built up a CRM company to 10,000 users. I mean, like the list can go on and on. But, you know, I think the biggest piece that I've learned is you have to have 3 components. You have to have the right people. You have to have the right opportunity. And most importantly, it has to be the right time in the market. Mm. And I have found that when I sacrificed one of those 3, it failed every single time.
Mm. I love that. Huge takeaway. So you have to have the right people, the right opportunity, and
the right time.
The right timing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so true.
And you know what's not in there? Capital. Mm-mm. You figured it out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fascinating to me. I was waiting for you to say capital and you didn't say it.
You can find money. I think you can find money.
Yeah, that's a good lesson.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you don't have the right team or the right partner, you don't have the right opportunity and you don't have the right timing in the market, the money makes no difference. I mean, and we've had a couple of businesses that we invested in, right? And we got into it and realized, you know what, it's the wrong CEO.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm hearing some future podcast episodes, especially around the people and how to navigate the right opportunity. And the timing is sometimes a little bit of luck.
It is.
But those first two, I think we should definitely do a deep dive. So guys, what are your takeaways from this?
One of the things that really jumped out at me, Seychelle, and maybe it's because I know you so well, and you're curious. You're a genuinely curious person. And you know, you being in a bar saying, I'm going to get curious about someone changed your life. Mm-hmm. I read a book by Brian Grazer called Curiosity. And he really got to be this world famous Hollywood actor based on curiosity conversations. Mm. And that's what immediately came to mind when I was hearing your story.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, this was truly awesome. And one of the things that you said in the very beginning that just really resonated with me and why it resonated is because you haven't strayed from it. Yeah. Your choice, whether to work to live or live to work, right? And I think living to work is sort of the American way.
Yes, it is.
Right?
I'm against. Yeah. I feel against the grain at times.
Yes, And just seeing your progress in that and seeing just your commitment to keeping that from, I mean, what, 12 years since we've known each other has been remarkable. And, you know, in sort of closing with this amazing Seychelles story, one of the things that hasn't come up yet is your leadership, right? And to build an amazing empire, I've learned that you've got to continue to work on yourself and being a strong leader. And, you know, watching you as a leader is just so personally inspirational to me. And one of the things that, you know, you don't just talk the talk, you know, you really truly walk it with your people. And every single day you get up and yes, you started by doing it for your family and now you're doing it for your work family every single day.
I fiercely love and want to see my work family be happier, healthier, and wealthier.
Yep. Yeah. And it shows. And so I admire you so much as a leader and just thank you for what you've done to our tribe and your leadership. And it's been fun to watch.
Well, thanks for doing a deep dive with us today, Seychelles. Well,
thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah. Well, you're here all the time. You're on the podcast.
Good luck getting rid of me now. Yes.
Well, so now we're going to do a little pivot, literally do a pivot.
Like a physical pivot.
I'm pivoting. For those of you who can't see, I'm pivoting here on the set. And now we're going to chat with me and Wendy.
Yeah. I'm really excited about this. I have interviewed you before.
Yes, you have.
And I know you really well. And so, you know, that's always fun when you get to interview someone that you're
Absolutely.
Really close with.
And you're fantastic at interviewing.
Well, thank you. I'd like to start, Wendy, with something a little different with you. We all know you have a phenomenal business. You have a really big business and it's a public, I would almost say famous business. And so we know that. I want to go back a little bit. What has been fascinating for me about you is how early in your life and in your journey you started the pursuit of a high net worth. Mm. I look back in my 20s and I barely knew what that term meant. So I'd like you to start us with, you know, the moment that you and Jay, your husband, are making $85,000 combined.
Yeah.
You're working for the state of Texas.
Yep.
And you make a decision to become millionaires.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, it was really the spark of a who, you know. It's interesting, the parallel between my story and Seychelles, in that, you know, it's really being open and receptive to what the universe is throwing at you, mm-hmm. and it's who are you surrounding yourself with.
Yeah.
And so my husband started at Keller Williams, and they required everyone to take a class on how to read a profit and loss statement. And so the whole company was supposed to turn out, and the then president at the time, Mo Anderson, whose, you know, nickname was the Velvet Hammer, a wonderful empire builder.
Mo Anderson is an icon.
Yeah.
Yes.
The original
yes.
empire builder.
Yeah.
Yes. The first empire builder that I met that I felt very drawn to. And she has personally impacted me a lot over the years. And it really starts with this story. And so everyone in the company was supposed to come out and take a class on how to read a P&L. And as luck would have it, the only one that showed up was my husband, Jay.
Unbelievable.
Which is amazing to think about. Here is an icon in the real estate industry teaching a class. And probably because it was about numbers, everybody else was like, oh, I'm busy, I got a meeting, whatever. And what I also love about this story is that she could have chosen to reschedule the class.
Yeah.
And she did not do it.
Yeah.
Which is why when I teach, I never worry about who's in the audience, because whoever is there is who needs to be there at that moment.
Really well said.
The message.
Really well said.
And so she sat down with him and it turned from a class into a one-on-one coaching session on how to read a balance sheet, how to tackle your profit and loss statement, and then into a conversation about tracking your net worth and how important that was. And so, of course, Jay came home and had this conversation with me and said, listen, we need to start doing this. We need to start tracking your net worth. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that don't know what that means, essentially net worth is all of your assets. So everything you own minus all of your liabilities, which is everything you owe, right? So everything you own, all your stuff, your businesses, your cash in hand, minus all your debt. And he came home and he said, Wendy, we need to figure this out. And so we sat down and we had just moved to Austin, Texas from New York City. Mm-hmm. We were both around 30 years old. I worked for the state of Texas. I was making about $42,000 a year. And Jay was making about the same. Mm-hmm. And we figured out that our net worth was about $2,200.
Okay.
Which is actually great in a way because most people in this country are actually negative. They're in debt. And so that was great. But for the two of us, we thought, gosh, here we are. We've been working for at least 22 years collectively. And all we have to show for it is $2,200.
Had you owned a house at that
point? No, we didn't own a house. We'd been living in New York City.
Yeah.
And so we moved to Austin and we were 30, right? And I thought, wow, we have $100 a year to show for literally 40 hours. 50, 60, 80 hours of work a week.
Yeah.
It's disheartening.
Do you know what the average net worth of a renter is?
Yeah, it's about $5,000.
You know the average?
$600.
Yeah.
It's depressing.
Yeah.
It's really depressing. It's mostly because people do have assets, but they also have crushing debt.
Yeah.
And so that was a big wake-up call for us. We immediately bought our first home, which eventually 3 years later became our first rental property. And at that time, we set a huge goal for ourselves, which was we wanted to become net worth millionaires in 10 years.
Yeah.
We actually set three goals. We wanted to become net worth millionaires. We wanted to be having $75,000 in passive income. And we wanted to have 10 rental properties.
Where'd you come up with those numbers?
It was kind of random, to be honest with you. I think sometimes when you're trying to think bigger, right? Because for me, trust me, you know, I grew up in a small farming community in northern Minnesota. My whole extended family is farmers. We never talked about any of this growing up. I was a journalism major, none of it. And so for us, it was a little bit random. You know?
Well, so how did you feel? A lot of us have that experience where our spouses come home mm-hmm. with a great idea. And you know, we don't always buy in or vice versa. How did you feel when Jay came home and said that? What got you to buy into that?
Well, a big part of me was like, this is nuts. This is really crazy. I don't ever see this happening. There's no way we're going to get there. And I actually had a lot of residual feelings about money from growing up lower middle class, which was money is bad. Money's evil. Rich people are somehow...
You have to cheat to get it.
Some rich people are somehow horrible people.
Yeah.
And so I think I just was really skeptical. And yet at the same time, my husband was working for a company where his kind of this abundance mentality that permeates Keller Williams was really starting to filter through his brain. Mm-hmm. And it was rubbing off a little... for me at home, but not really.
Yeah.
I think it was more like, okay, sure, let's do it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know?
So you make the goal. What was your very first decision? What was the first step?
The very first decision was we said, you know what? We need to buy a house.
Okay.
We need to stop throwing our money away on rent. Mm-hmm. And we bought a little house in South Austin. Mm-hmm. Then it was South Austin. Now it's actually Central Austin because the city's grown so much. And
how long ago was that?
Yeah, it was 20 years ago, actually.
Everybody,
19 years ago.
Everybody listening wishes they bought a house in Austin 20 years ago, by the way.
Seriously.
Luckily, we bought a bunch. And so, it was that first house. It was just a little, kind of a crappy stucco house, honestly, a little two-bedroom, one bath. You know, we were always like trying to maneuver around each other in the morning in the bathroom. And we thought we paid too much for it. It wasn't a bargain. And yet we weren't paying rent anymore. So that was really our first step. And then it really wasn't until 3 years later when we really started to get into real estate investing.
And you kept that house and bought another.
Yeah. So our first investment was actually Jay wrote The Millionaire Real Estate Investor, or was in the process of writing that with Gary Keller and Dave Jenks. And so we really thought, gosh, we aren't millionaire real estate investors. In fact, we haven't done any investing. And so we needed to be legitimate. So we flipped a house with a couple other partners on the east side of Austin. And it was wildly unsuccessful. We put in, I don't even know how many hours of sweat equity. And I think each partner ended up netting about $500.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is I have a lot of people that talk about house flipping. That's actually not going to increase your net worth. Yeah. It's an income-producing activity.
Yeah, it's right? Active income. It's not passive.
It's just income.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that I'm excited for with us doing Empire Builders is that you're not afraid to unpack the P&L and the numbers mm-hmm. behind it. I think it is so taboo that people don't talk about wealth. They may talk about it as like an airy-fairy out there mm-hmm. topic, but something that we're going to be covering a lot is wealth as a tangible, attainable mm-hmm. goal. Yeah. And I think that's a passion of yours and something I really appreciate yeah. that you brought to the table is that's a topic of conversation that actually we aren't allowed to skip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so I love that you do that.
Well, yeah, and I love that. I think about your journey in 13 years. It's unbelievable.
It really is. It is, yeah. but you know what? We didn't treat the real estate like I need to make money in 3 years.
Exactly.
We didn't treat it like it's our
yeah.
personal home that we're going to then buy and sell and keep profit on. This is something we're going to buy and keep it forever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wealth building is a get rich slow scheme.
It is.
Well, that's right. And you entered into this, both of you, really young and with the mindset that you were going to focus on your net worth. And that was the foundational thought and mindset that got you here.
Yeah.
So Wendy, you had a 10-year goal.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to hit it?
So we became net worth millionaires after about 6 years.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, which is kind of hard to believe.
Yeah.
And then now we are, I guess we're, 20 years into that journey and we're really seeing the hockey stick happen right now. All of the groundwork that we laid. But, the reality is, Via, is that we felt really poor for a long time.
I remember talking to you.
Our net worth was increasing, even when we became net worth millionaires, we felt poor. Because we put all of our money back into acquiring more assets.
And I remember getting to know you, Wendy. You would pick me up and I can't remember what your car was. It was a Jetta? Was it
a Jetta?
It was in the Jetta.
I had a Jetta for 9 years.
And a lot of our colleagues in real estate were not driving Jettas. Yeah. They were driving Mercedes and mm-hmm. Teslas. And you always maintained that. You lived in your house for how long until you remodeled it?
Yeah.
A long time.
Gosh, forever.
Yeah.
And it was carpet in the bathroom, I painted it room by room. It's not ideal the way we did it. And yet always the focus was on what can we put away for today to create opportunity for tomorrow. And the reality is, I don't want to say we're in a place where we can buy and do whatever we want to, but that is kind of the reality of it, is there's very few limitations on our choices.
Well, what is wealth? Wealth is doing what you want with who you want, when you want, right?
Yeah.
And that's all we're all trying to achieve, right?
Absolutely.
And more importantly, impacting your community and giving back, which I'd love to kind of touch on because I think your wealth journey is one thing. What's amazing is how you've turned that into almost a calling to teach others about it. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you're doing with your
club? Yeah, and I would just say, just real quick, my definition of wealthy is, do you have enough passive income to fund your perfect life?
Oh, that's great.
I would just ask yourself that question. Do you have enough passive income to fund your perfect life?
That's fantastic.
And it's not for me to judge who your perfect life is.
Yeah.
So whatever that looks like for you, and are you working towards that on a daily basis?
Yeah. Really, really great definition.
Yep.
So what are you doing right now with other emerging millionaires, other people who might have this goal?
Yes. Well, so I'm very passionate about helping people build wealth through real estate because I just, like I've been saying, we are the sum of the five people we spend the most time with. And I feel like we got a gift from the beginning. We got someone who lit the spark inside of us. And so we're doing something, we call it our Hot Millionaire Club.
Such a great
name. And it's an amalgam of our folks on our real estate team. And then my husband is he's a lot like you, Via. He's an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
He's built several businesses inside the world of Keller Williams. And so people from his world and his businesses come and we talk about wealth building.
Yeah.
We do it once a month.
Yeah.
And it's a potluck at our house. And everyone tracks their net worth.
And they share it, right?
And they share it.
It's like undressing in the doctor's office.
Yes. Yeah.
Like showing your, I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's very public. And it's been great for us because, you know, at every stage in your life, you still need accountability around your goals. So everyone sets a goal around what they want their net worth to be and then how they're going to get there by, you know, either starting businesses or purchasing assets or whatever that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say, and I didn't mention this before, and is that the number one thing that we did, the number one habit was really tracking our net worth.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, what's interesting and really inspiring for me and not only you guys, but all of the people in our world, in our empire building world, is that you guys really got this young and focused on it. And I did not. I did not. I'm in the beginning of this journey, and I hope that our listeners and our viewers can go along this with me if you are too, right? I really don't want everybody to think that they have to have hit a million already or even more than that. I haven't. So let's do this together, right? We're going to all kind of do this together a little bit.
And so I would really say that this is the big life aspect to this podcast. It's one thing to build a big real estate or really any other business, to build an empire, but not to have that really that big life component, which you really need those assets to kind of round all that out. And I don't know if you guys listened to the last podcast, but really Sarah mentioned that, which is she built a massive, massive empire with one silo.
Yeah.
Right. And then realized that she really needed some wealth building assets to go along with it, some rental properties.
And, you know, as you were speaking, one of the things that is sort of in common with what I said last episode, Wendy, is that I had sort of the hockey stick. And for those that don't know, the hockey stick, Gary Keller talks about that. It's typically wealth building, empire building is a lot of decisions that really you have incremental gains, like small gains, over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden it all takes off.
Yeah.
And when you were saying, you know, get rich slow scheme, right, of wealth building. I mean, empire building's like that too, guys. I mean, there are some businesses that you see that really like take off from the get-go, but very few.
Very few.
I mean, most of us built our empires slow, right?
And 10 years is a really magic number.
Yes.
And I tell myself that a lot. And yes. I just want to really encourage those listening that we can completely do this in a decade. It's really, really doable in a decade. And I think that is, it's not only important, it's become my mantra. Otherwise, it can get a little discouraging, you know, especially if you're not 20. I am no longer 20. And so you can do a lot, you know, in 10 years. And Sarah, you know, I mean, all of you, what you have in common is you were surrounded by that top five people. You had enough people in your lives giving you this counsel that, hey guys, it's not about revenue and income. It's about taking that and buying assets.
Yes.
I'm really good at making income and revenue. And I never had the people in my life to say, hey, turn this into assets, right? And so I didn't.
That's right, Bea.
I had some great trips. I've lived in some really great houses, but you know, as a result, I don't have the net worth that you guys do. So it's an exciting journey.
I'm excited about that. And I think one thing that I take away from Wendy and I see mirrored in you, Via, is I think you have to understand what your relationship is with money first, right?
Yeah,
and that's something that I think you're discussing beautifully, right? Is I had a great income, but I didn't have a relationship with wealth. And I think to Wendy's upbringing, right? I grew up having this feeling of money is bad, right? And we shouldn't have it, right? And when you looked at your net worth, it felt like that, right? That was a reflection of how you felt about money. And I think becoming aware of that and then looking for mentors in your life that maybe have a different relationship with money that you can mirror and model, right? To help move you forward, I think is where that journey begins.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really when we look at our influence on each other, that's where the big shift happened, was the mindset around money that then allowed you to be more open to make different decisions to move the needle.
Yep. Yeah. So Wendy, in closing, you know, just to wrap up, I would love you to share with our listeners, what is the one thing you want them to hear today from your story?
I would just go back to that one habit. You know, we really are the sum of the choices that we make every single day. Mm-hmm. And habits can be good or they can be bad. Mm-hmm. But they'll still inform who we are. You know, if I have a habit of smoking a pack of cigarettes and drinking a fifth of whiskey every morning, that's going to inform who I'm going to be in the future.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that habit, I mean, there's several habits around it, but really the habit of tracking your net worth and really spending less than you make and really saving the rest to put towards assets. That's really, it seems simple. It's not easy, right? But it is actually quite simple. And then taking action and moving forward with buying investment properties or building businesses or whatever that looks like.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, if the average person listening lives on 80% of their income and saves and invests the other 20%, that's all this takes.
Yep.
That's how the Papasan started. And I'm sure that's how you started. That's how we all started.
Very little.
I started tracking my net worth last year and, you know, was really proud that it went up 130,000, which is not a lot. It's not a lot, but it felt like a lot. It felt like so much to me.
Yeah, it is a lot.
You know, Seychelle and Wendy, you both have been remarkable leaders in this wealth building journey for me. And this was an amazing episode diving into both of your journeys of wealth. And they're a little different, but also had some similarities. So this was great for me to hear it again. And both of you have led a lot of Keller Williams, have led a lot of our tribe in wealth building. And I appreciate you both.
Oh, I do too. And I just want to thank everybody for tuning into the Empire Builder podcast. We're here to talk about building big businesses and having even bigger lives. So tune in, subscribe, and we will hopefully talk to you soon.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.